you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes up in about 17 minutes at noon. Here on KPCC, Seth Rogen will be Terry's guest. He's got a new memoir. He'll talk about his family, his bar mitzvah, Jewish summer camp, all kinds of things under conversation with very funny Seth Rogen with Terry Gross on Fresh Air at noon right here on KPCC. And just a reminder that Take Two is off today, so gives you an opportunity to check out On Point, which we typically air at 9 o'clock evenings right here on KPCC. So check out On Point today at 1 o'clock here on KPCC. Right now, though, we turn our attention to the events of the early 20th century between the U.S. and Mexico and how those events along the border reverberate right here today, including in Southern California. Joining us is writer Jeff Gwynn, who's written a number of books, including on Charles Manson, on Jim Jones, and other books. His latest is titled War on the Border, Via Pershing, the Texas Rangers, and an American Invasion. Jeff Gwynn, good to have you with us on Air Talk.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
So let's talk first about how this incursion into southern New Mexico set off this whole series of events that you recount in the book.
Well, even then, back in 1916, the United States basically believed no one would dare try to invade us. No one would attack us over our own borders. Pancho Villa, who was in a revolt against the federal government in Mexico, thought otherwise. If he could just do something to aggravate America enough that American troops would swarm into Mexico to retaliate, then he could claim that this was an American invasion of Mexico. The federal government couldn't stop it, and only he could save the country. So it was a calculated risk by Villa, and it's one that both countries are paying for today.
And so why Columbus, New Mexico, this tiny little town, why was that the target in Villa's attack?
Well, it wasn't the original target. Villa looked at some other towns that were right on the border. He looked in California. He looked in Texas, but ultimately decided his best chance of going in and doing some real damage and getting away would be Columbus. He believed there was only a small military outpost there, maybe 15 or 20 soldiers. As it turned out, he was off by about 200 times, but that was a mistake he paid for. But he chose that place. He thought it was isolated. He thought it was safe. It turned out not to be that way.
So then, what is the response of the U.S. government to Villa's attack?
Part of the problem for the United States government was just a few years earlier, we had gone into Mexico uninvited and occupied the port city of Veracruz for almost 10 months, simply blasted apart the defenses and went in there because we believed that guns were being smuggled into Mexico against the Monroe Doctrine. That had upset Mexico. So now America wants to respond. We've got to go catch Villa. But we've got to do that. We have to go back into Mexico again and this time convince the Mexican government, no, this isn't actually an invasion. We're not going to occupy anything again. And the Mexican government didn't believe that.
How does Porfirio Diaz, Mexico's president for two extensive stretches, president right up till before this raid, how does his relationship with the U.S. and attempts to curry favor factor into the relations between the two countries and the revolution that's taking place in Mexico?
Well, Porfirio Diaz decided that Mexico's survival as an economy depended on good relations with America. And essentially, he allowed American businesses to come in, particularly in the northern states of Mexico, and just dominate everything, economically own most of the land. Only 9% of the arable land in Mexico in 1916 is owned by peasants or the common people. The rest is owned by American conglomerates or some of the Mexican ranches. So the real revolution is going on now for almost 9 years with different factions. First, they do get rid of Diaz, but then Venustiano Carranza and Pancho Villa and others are all fighting over control of the country. It's chaos down in Mexico, and this is what the United States forces encounter when they come in after Villa.
And President Woodrow Wilson obviously, you know, has concerns what the costs are going to be in launching this campaign. So what was his dictate about this nearly year-long punitive expedition, as it's called?
Well, Wilson didn't want to commit too many American troops to go into Mexico because he was still figuring we might have to enter World War I over in Europe. We hadn't done that yet. And so John Pershing, the general who sent out to lead the punitive expedition, is given an impossible task. Go into Mexico, and whatever you do, either capture Villa to satisfy the public that wants revenge, or at least destroy the Villistas. At the same time, don't do anything that will make the Mexican government believe that we're invading them again. So go down there, do whatever you have to do, but don't do anything, was essentially the message he got. It was an impossible situation.
When we come back, we'll talk about how Germany does factor into this and its efforts to gain support from Mexico. Jeff Gwynn is author of War on the Border, Villa, Pershing, the Texas Rangers, and an American Invasion. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. We'll be back in 1 minute. We're talking on Air Talk right now with Jeff Gwynn, whose book published today is titled War on the Border, Villa, Pershing, the Texas Rangers, and an American Invasion. Before we get into how this sort of factors into World War I, as you were mentioning earlier, and Germany's outreach to Mexico, this is a period where we have some substantial immigration into the United States from Mexico. Los Angeles has, you know, many families that go back to this period of arrival in the United States. What drives that immigration out of Mexico to the U.S.?
Well, you've got to remember, there have been revolutionary forces at work in Mexico for almost 20 years prior to Villa attacking Columbus. And most of the activity, most of the fighting took place in the northern states. Mexico had no real roads or infrastructure to speak of. So the government is in Mexico City, far, far away from the American border. So that's where the revolutionaries would do most of their fighting. The people there, the peasants, in fear of their own lives, tried to flee into America. The problem being that these kinds of refugees, poor people, many of them injured, many of them sick, many of them unable to care for themselves, were seen as a burden by the Americans that would have to take them in on the other side. And so we already had this problem of unwanted refugees. We can't take everybody. Who wants all these Mexicans? Maybe they're the worst of the country, and they're just coming here to get away from the authorities there.
This is the rhetoric of the time.
And it's the rhetoric of today. I mean, this is one reason we always need to learn from history, because if we don't face the problems at the time, they're going to repeat just like they are now.
All right. You write about Germany and its efforts to get consideration from Mexico. In what form did that take?
Well, Germany had wanted to make sure that America didn't enter World War I. They were quite certain that America would enter on the part of what would become known as the Allies. And so to that aim, they established a spy center in New York City and usually worked pumping out propaganda, much of it about how Americans needed to be afraid of what was going on at the border. The Mexicans were dangerous. And at the same time promising the Mexican government, if you would go to war with us against the Americans, we not only will help you economically, but we will work with you to defeat America and take back a lot of the land that they took from you in previous wars, including the states of Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico. Your listeners will be pleased to know they didn't promise Mexico that they would get back California, because Germany promised that to the Japanese if they would come into World War One on the German side.
So what ultimately led this expedition to be unsuccessful? Because this, the U.S. had trucks, automobiles, they had vehicles they were able to use, albeit, you know, there aren't roads, as you described, on the Mexican side of the border. But why was Pershing and his force here unsuccessful?
Well, oddly enough, they were successful and unsuccessful at the same time. They did not capture Pancho Villa. They were able to pretty much cripple his forces for a short time, but by the time they decided, or rather it was decided by the government, they needed to bring the expedition back because World War One was looming, Villa was pretty well established again. But the good part, the successful part, is while they were in Mexico chasing Villa, America had a very small army at the time, and most of the soldiers had absolutely no battle experience. Pershing was able to train the 10,000 or so soldiers in the expedition while they were in Mexico. That's why when America enters World War One shortly afterward, Pershing is head of the U.S. forces, and we have an elite group of fighting troops that are able to go right in and start battling the Germans. So that was a success of the punitive expedition, even though their goal, Villa, continued his wild and sometimes bloody ways.
We should mention that General Pershing, of course, has a square in downtown Los Angeles that is named for him as a result of his exploits during World War One. We're talking with Jeff Gwynn, author of War on the Border, Villa, Pershing, the Texas Rangers, and an American Invasion. What was it about Pancho Villa that made him such a charismatic figure?
Pancho Villa knew how to market himself. For instance, he sold film rights to his revolutionary battles to a Hollywood film company that sent camera crews down. There was a feature film in American theaters where an actor portrayed Villa as sort of a Robin Hood type of hero. And he also knew how to present himself to the poor people in Mexico. They had been downtrodden in every presidential administration. There had been quite a few of them, 40 in 53 years. And what he would be careful to do, even while he's doing some very bloody things, is give free beef to the peasants, try to remind them he's the only one protecting them. He was a master marketer, and it's proven to this day because we're still talking about him.
Well, and so this revolutionary era, and as you mentioned, it wasn't just Villa, but there were others, Emiliano Zapata and others. What led this era to come to a close and the revolutionaries to end their efforts?
Mexico and America almost came to war before the punitive expedition was withdrawn. After that happened, Mexico had to rethink its relationship not only with Mexico, but with the potential allies it had been talking to in a battle against America, Japan, Germany, and so forth. The Mexican government ultimately realized that even at its best, it couldn't summon an army that could take on the American army, which was proving itself overseas in Europe. And beyond that, the whole concept of the border had changed. And now there was talk of putting walls up along the border to keep unwanted Mexicans out. That actually had been going on since 1909, and it started in California. And there were any number of attempts to put up massive walls, and these all failed. But everybody was on guard after that point.
All right.
The tensions lasted ever since.
Thank you so much, Jeff Gwynn, author of the brand new book, War on the Border, Villa, Pershing, the Texas Rangers, and an American Invasion. Fresh Air with Terry Gross, her guest Seth Rogen coming up next. Have a terrific afternoon.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. one lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.